Welcome to episode 363 of the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I'm Ashley Scott Myers, screenwriter and blogger at sellingyourscreenplay.com. Today I'm interviewing Liam O'Donnell, another filmmaker who moved to LA and worked his way up and is now writing and directing feature films. He just completed the third film in his sci-fi epic Skyline series, so we're going to talk about that and how that all came together. So stay tuned for that interview. If you find this episode valuable, please help me out by giving me a review in iTunes or leaving a comment on YouTube or retweeting the podcast on Twitter or liking or sharing it on Facebook. These social media shares really do help spread word about the podcast, so they're very much appreciated. Any websites or links that I mention in the podcast can be found on my blog in the show notes. I also publish a transcript with every episode in case you'd rather read the show or look at something later on. You can find all the podcast show notes at www.sellingyourscreenplay.com/podcasts, and then just look for episode number 363. If you want my free guide, How to Sell a Screenplay in 5 weeks, you can pick that up by going to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. It's completely free. You put in your email address and I'll send you a new lesson once per week for 5 weeks, along with a bunch of bonus lessons. I teach the whole process of how to sell your screenplay in that guide. I'll teach you how to write a professional logline and query letter, and how to find agents, managers, and producers who are looking for material. Really is everything you need to know to sell your screenplay. Just go to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. A quick few words about what I'm working on. So we're still plugging away on The Rideshare Killer. I'm recording this right before the new year, so not a lot to report over the last couple of weeks, but we are definitely making progress. We got back the second pass on the trailer and the second pass on the score, so I'm doing notes on those things over this next week. I'm starting to do some real rewriting on the noir thriller that I'm trying to put together that we're hoping to shoot next year, so that'll start to take up some time in the next few weeks as I really want to get the script in shape and make sure we're all happy with it. I'm going to be reopening up the contest in a couple of weeks. We'll start taking early bird submissions February 1st. Again, this year, we're going to be concentrating on low budget projects, so scripts that could be produced for less than $1 million US. But we are also going to be opening this up for a short film section, and it'll be very short film section. Again, these will be concentrating on short films that could be produced on a low budget, definitely less than $10,000, and probably even maybe $1,000. I got to think that through, talk to some short filmmakers, and kind of figure out what the budget range is on something that I think I can really get produced. I do run into filmmakers quite often looking for short films, so I'm hoping I'll have an avenue to really start to promote these two again and get some of them produced. So stay tuned with more updates on that. Those are the main things that I've been working on over the last couple of weeks. So now let's get into the main segment. Today I'm interviewing filmmaker Liam O'Donnell. Here is the interview. Welcome, Liam, to the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I really appreciate you coming on the show with me today.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks, Ashley.
So to start out, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up and how did you get interested in the entertainment business?
I grew up in Cohasset, Massachusetts. It's a picturesque little beach town about 40 minutes south of Boston. I think like most kids, I got interested from, you know, the George Lucas, Steven Spielberg films. Kind of blew my mind, and then James Cameron's Predator, well, not James Cameron's Predator, but Predator, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and then Terminator 2 was kind of the movie where it's like, how did they do that? Mm-hmm. And I got really, you know, fascinated by visual effects. I went to Boston University, and I took a screenwriting class there, but I wasn't like 100% committed to it. I was a political science major. But I caught the bug when I took that class and was like, you know, I'm going to go to LA. I was either going to go for entertainment lawyer or like just defer a year. And I decided to defer a year and go out there with my friend, Matthew Santoro, who was a visual effects kind of concept, designer. And so the two of us, lived together in a really crappy Hollywood apartment, with a very low rent, thankfully, back in 2004. And we ended up meeting Greg and Colin Strauss, who owned Hydraulics Visual Effects, and pitching them a bunch of ideas. And they liked my writing. They liked his art. And so we kind of became the heads of their, like, pitch department for their commercials, music videos. And eventually AVP2 came across their desk, and we did the pitch with them for that, and they ended up booking that movie. So that was, like, 2006, and they... just were generous enough to fly me up on set and be kind of an on-set creative consultants, and I'd be kind of working in the trailer with Joshua Cortez, the previs artist, and we'd be kind of doing the notes on the next action scene that they'd be filming the next week while they were filming that day. So I got a lot of on-set experience, a lot of sort of getting creative feedback experience, and then trying to make a lot of different people happy at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you were getting a real good background in special effects, really understanding how special effects, you know, are made and created and are used in films.
Yeah, I mean, just from like, I think the first commercial that we booked was like Fresca, and it was like a bunch of women that were like in Fresca bubbles, like ballerinas, like singing and dancing around. That was supposed to be how Fresca felt in your mouth. And so, you know, I wrote like a treatment out of what their idea was. And then like a day later, you see, someone doing the animation for it. It kind of blew my mind. And then being on set, and then they're all just filmed on green screen, with, you know, some beautiful camera moves, and then boom, the commercial happens. So, right from the beginning, kind of getting through the process and how, you know, and a lot of times it is, I don't want to say, but the actual filming of it can be fairly simple, and it gets kind of built up as this incredibly complicated process. And it is, but it's all about hiring, you know, really, really smart people to help you from the direction standpoint. Like, you don't need to be a visual effects genius to make visual effects movies. You need to work with visual effects geniuses to make
visual effects movies. So how did you guys get this job at this special effects company? Maybe just walk us through that. I get a lot of emails from people just looking, how do they get that first break? How do they get their foot in the door? What was your, in with this special effects company?
Well, in the meantime, Matthew, I think for me, the benefit was that I was kind of like paired with this guy who did amazing visuals already. So we were friends, and so he was helping opening doors that I think if I just moved out as like a wannabe writer on my own, never would have happened. So that's one huge benefit. And two was like, in the meantime, we were working at like what I like to call a pothead production company, where they were like literally feeding us with, it was very, very indie, feeding us with like burritos and pot. And and that would be like what you'd get as your salary. And so they were doing like local cable commercials, so like filming with a 24p camera. So I was getting experience, directing those. Like I directed the first thing was like a local cable commercial, and then I did like a makeup, infomercial, stuff like that, where making a tiny bit of money, but kind of getting that sort of experience. And then with them, the guys who owned that company were friends with Greg and Colin. And we were just like social friends first, but I had this pitch for this really personal esoteric sci-fi film, and went to dinner with him and just gave him the pitch. And he read it and was like, this is too crazy, but I really like the writing. And so I think he just remembered that when he had another, I think it was eBay China commercial, and he didn't have another writer to do it. He sent it to me. And that ended up working really well. I don't think we even got that job, but the next job was the Fresca job. Huh. And we booked that, and then we like started booking more and more stuff. And so then, I guess the other tip I would give people is like, I was 22, 23 at the time. I had like no family, no life, nothing. I just started showing up to their office every day, and they were like, do you need a space? And I was like, yeah, that'd be great. And they gave me like a laptop, and I was just kind of working in the corner of their office, trying to keep a low profile. And then eventually they were like, well, what are we paying you? They weren't actually paying me. And so it was like, like $100 a day was a lot to me back then. I just kind of would be like, do you want to go for a walk? Because they're working on visual effects. They're working on the stuff that's actually bringing in revenue. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, we'll go for a walk and just pitch movie ideas and talk about movies and talk about different things that we could do. And then they're like, well, you should write that movie idea. I was like, oh, really? And so that was the first script that I wrote with them, was called like Singularity, and it was a black hole movie on Earth. We're very much, they had just done Day After Tomorrow, so it was like, we wanted to do our own big disaster movie, which ended up kind of, feeding into, I think, what Skyline actually became, which was like our own, independent small version of a disaster movie that we can film and control ourselves. Mm-hmm.
So let's dig into Skyline. And we're looking at Skylines as the 2020, the third installment of this trilogy. Maybe just back us up a little bit and kind of just tell us what is sort of the premise of Skyline, and then bring us up to date on the current Skylines here in 2020.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the first Skyline from 2010 was literally just, it's a bunch of people waking up after a night of partying and seeing bright lights outside and slowly revealing that aliens have come to Earth and that they're mesmerizing and entrancing people en masse and abducting them onto the ships. And, you know, at the very end, we reveal that they're, you know, basically here for our human brains as a resource. So that was kind of a very much a zombie movie script-wise and story-wise with a sci-fi gloss sheen. And it was very much written to the location because the director and producer, co-director, Greg Strauss, that was his penthouse that he had just moved into. And so I went up to that penthouse and looked around. We were like, there's a movie here. We have to figure out what it is. And so it kind of naturally all kind of came from there. And we ended up, you know, making a deal with that building, and all the kind of different set pieces all kind of came from the different locations that we had access to, like the parking garage, the pool deck, and of course the helipad on the rooftop. So it was very much like making a movie within the limitations of what we had, and how we can kind of shape it and contain it and force them to be stuck in this high rise.
Yeah. Now, when you were starting out and you guys made this first film, did you sort of envision it as a trilogy? The first film was more successful than you guys had expected, so you went on and made a second one. What was sort of the thinking there as far as doing a trilogy versus just a one-off indie film?
Definitely not a trilogy. It was kind of like, it was a little bit of a one-off until we were in post and, you know, Relativity and Universal were distributing, and I think it was Tucker Tooley at Relativity, and Robbie Brenner and Ryan Cavanaugh, they were like asking us what a sequel would be. They really liked the film. So we started brainstorming, and we had like a real big version of what Beyond Skyline was, where it was like probably a $40 million movie. And of course the movie came out and it was successful globally, but domestically, you know, they had really high hopes for it. You know, it did about half of what they were expecting. So it didn't end up getting, you know, some type of blown out big sequel. It ended up being like the foreign buyers, you know, in the indie film market kept asking about a sequel. Mm-hmm. And so we had this treatment that needed to be kind of, you know, pared down and made more shootable, and have it all kind of be figured out. And time was ticking, you know, it'd be like 2 years, people would like kick the tires on it. And then, you know, we were kind of trying to get people to pay for the actual script because we had the treatment, but we wanted to pay for the script. And it was like, I think it got to 2013 and I was like, it's kind of now or never. I went to them and said like, you know, I'll write the script out, I'll spec it out, but I'd like to direct it if I do that. And they said, okay, yeah, go for it. Because I think at that time it was like a little bit of like, yeah, like they said, now or never, like a diminishing asset, like mm-hmm. either give it a shot or, you know, it's not going to happen again. So 2014, we ended up, you know, having a script that we really liked. And I'd written it for Frank Grillo, who at that point I thought was like someone that I was just like a fan of. And then all of a sudden, boom, like Purge Anarchy comes out and he has this big, huge hit. So I felt like, man, we might not be able to get him. But thankfully, you know, we were able to thread the needle on his schedule and land him for that film, which was a big break for us.
Yeah. I'm curious too, just when I looked at the trailer and I was researching this interview, you know, it very much looks like a War of the Worlds Independence Day. And I'm just curious, as like the writer and the creator of this, how do you give it like unique spin? Clearly there is a sort of canon of films that are similar, but what is sort of your unique hook, and how do you give this movie a unique twist to differentiate it from all the other similar ones?
Yeah. I mean, each one is definitely like, I don't even try to hide my influences. I try to relish them and embrace them and make them sort of drunk on movies in a weird way. But it is kind of like you always come back to embrace like what is the unique part of these movies and these franchises, and it really is to me like the alien human hybrid aspect to it, and the fact that the first one they're ripping out the hero's brain. You know, the movie ends with the literal hero of the film getting his brain ripped out in front of his girlfriend.
Jeez.
And then stuffed into an alien being. So it's like that's our unique hook. Mm-hmm. And then embracing that in the second one, that yes, we have the War of the Worlds father son type story, but you know, what if the son in War of the Worlds, we actually intercut to him in that part, because he kind of just goes away and then magically shows up at the end. So mm-hmm. we intercut to him, and then we literally rip his brain out of his body and stuff him into an alien being. And then when his son kind of shows up at the end and is this heroic thing, he's an alien creature at that point. And so that went into part three, which is obviously very inspired by Aliens and Starship Troopers and Pitch Black, but really embraced the fact that we have this team on a mission, and it's actually led by the hybrid aliens. It's not led by the humans. You know, the humans are part of it, but there's inner turmoil and inner politics and distrust between the group, because Lindsay Morgan, who plays Rose, she was exposed to all of the alien light while she was in the womb, and ended up growing and having all these kind of fantastical powers. And her adopted brother is that son from the second movie, who was a human brain put into an alien body. So those two are really the heroes. It's not the humans. And so, yeah, it is always kind of like just leaning into the uniqueness, and what I like about it is that like we're kind of unapologetically strange, and we never try to put the genie back in the bottle or the toothpaste back in the bottle. Like the world basically ends at the first movie, and we kind of go with that. There's never going to be like some happy ending that undoes the damage from the first film. It's all about dealing with that trauma moving forward.
Yeah, yeah. How can people see Skylines? Do you know what the release schedule is going to be like?
Yeah, in all English-speaking territories, we are available December 18th on like iTunes, Amazon, On Demand, VOD. We're in select theaters, which is generally usually like for Beyond Skyline, that meant just 10 screens worldwide. As of right now, like a week ago, it was going to be 100 screens and drive-ins and stuff like that, but and the lock-in gets worse as the lockdowns are getting worse. I have no idea. Gotcha. But I would encourage people to see it in a drive-in if you could. That would be awesome. I'm hoping to get to see it in a drive-in. It's definitely, the similar type release to Beyond. And then I think within a month, in January, we should be on Blu-ray and DVD as well.
Perfect. And what's the best way for people to keep up with what you're doing? Twitter, Facebook, a blog, anything you're comfortable sharing, I'll round up for the show notes.
It's Liam Odin, ODIN at Twitter and Instagram. And there's a kind of Skylines Facebook page that I run too, where I kind of update the three of those. So, I think it's Skylines Film with the three for the E on for Facebook.
Gotcha. I'll track those down and put those in the show notes. Liam, I really appreciate you coming on and talking with me today about this film. Good luck with this film, and good luck with all your future projects as well.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Ashley.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later. Bye. A quick plug for the SYS Screenwriting Analysis Service. It's a really economical way to get a high-quality professional evaluation on your screenplay. When you buy our three-pack, you get evaluations at just $67 per script for feature films and just $55 for teleplays. All the readers have professional experience reading for studios, production companies, contests, and agencies. You can read a short bio on each reader on our website, and you can pick the reader who you think is the best fit for your script. Turnaround time is usually just a few days, but rarely more than a week. The readers will evaluate your script on six key factors: concept, character, structure, marketability, tone, and overall craft, which includes formatting, spelling, and grammar. Every script will get a grade of pass, consider, or recommend, which should help you roughly understand where your script might rank if you were to submit it to a production company or agency. We can provide an analysis on features or television scripts. We also do proofreading without any analysis. We will also also look at a treatment or outline and give you the same analysis on it. So if you're looking to vet some of your project ideas, this is a great way to do it. We will also write your logline and synopsis for you. You can add this logline and synopsis writing service to an analysis, or you can simply purchase this service as a standalone product. As a bonus, if your screenplay gets a recommend or a consider from one of our readers, you get to list the screenplay in the SYS Select database, which is a database for producers to find screenplays and a big part of our SYS Select program. Producers are in the database searching for material on a daily basis, so it's another great way to get your material in front of them. As a further bonus, if your script gets a recommend from one of our readers, your screenplay will get included in our monthly Best Of newsletter. Each month, we send out a newsletter that highlights the best screenplays that have come through our script analysis service. This is a monthly newsletter that goes out to our list of over 400 producers who are actively looking for material. So again, this is another great way to get your material out there. So if you want a professional evaluation of your screenplay at a very reasonable price, check out www.sellingyourscreenplay.com/consultants. Again, that's sellingyourscreenplay.com/consultants. On the next episode of the podcast, I'm going to be interviewing John Sweets, who has been on the show twice before in episode 44 with his film The Scribbler and episode 309 with his sci-fi film called 3022. And now he's back on the show to talk about his latest film, Breach, starring Bruce Willis. John also directed the Die Hard battery commercial where Bruce Willis reprised his role from the iconic 80s film Die Hard. We talk about that and how doing this film with Willis actually helped him land that commercial, which is kind of counterintuitive. I actually thought when I was preparing for this interview, I kind of figured he did the commercial and then the commercial led to the film, but they really weren't all that connected. But I do think there was a little bit of help him in getting the commercial since he had already worked with Bruce Willis, but he explains it all in the episode. It's a fascinating story. John is a real doer. He's out there constantly making films. Highly encourage you, look him up on IMDb. He's done, at this point, dozens of feature films, but in any event, we have another fascinating interview with John next week, so keep an eye out for that episode. That's the show. Thank you for listening.